He's just what you'd expect for a man who covers sports. 6 foot four, 250 pounds, wiry, but he does know Kansas City sports as well as anyone. He's Kansas City Star columnist Sam McDowell on the program.
Trapped by my own cords over here.
I do that occasionally.
Second half of the program begins right now. You heard it. The big man, Sam McDowell, joins us here in the program. We will let you know Sam's appearance is brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know you can be seen quickly? That's right. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. It's right there, people. 435 and all. I'm pointing at it right now. It's in Overland Park. 435 and all. Weekdays, they're open 8 to 7. Saturdays, it's 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedic. Sam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
How long you've been doing this? For more than 30 years. About 30 years, right? Have you ever looked across at
That's
two adults?
Almost 30 years to the day. The 30-year anniversary is coming up.
And seen two shirts more of greater difference in size between what Sam's wearing and what I'm wearing.
No, but like you are color coordinated. You almost look like a couple of kids headed to your first day at school. Little brother and big brother. You bear a striking resemblance to each other.
I don't think we do.
I don't know what you want from me.
Just that.
I just thought that.
That's all I wanted.
I couldn't have worn that shirt when I was 10.
We were talking some Royals and we were talking some Chiefs. You pick which one do you want to start with first?
Let's pick either one. Well, let's do Chiefs first. We'll go Royals.
Tomorrow. Michael Dana, is this more, we love Michael Dana, he's great, or, oh my God, we don't think Felix Onyedike Ozama is ready to handle this role now, maybe ever?
Both. I think it's pretty clear if
Well, they obviously Felix, don't think if, you know, it, yeah, Dana Felix, sucks or they wouldn't pay him.
Right. But if Felix had developed to the point where they thought he would when they drafted him, just by the end of the season, even if he had shown signs. I mean, his playing time diminished over the course of his rookie year. It's not like he was getting gradually more time on the field. And obviously, you know, the first 6 weeks overlapped with a suspension that was no longer there over the back half of the season. But, I mean, there were games where he sat out altogether. And so, yeah, I think it's perfectly reasonable for us to conclude that the confidence in FAU is not fully there.
The return of Derek Nnadi and Mike Pinnell means the trade for Neil Farrell ain't exactly like, my God, we've got a wrecking crew here, correct?
Oh, yeah. But we saw that last year, right?
Well, we didn't see anything less out of Farrell than we did.
But they, like, my point.
Onyedike Ozama.
My point in saying that is, like, Derek Nnadi got hurt. This team, if there was one weakness on the defense, it was struggling against the run. And he still wasn't getting snaps. Like, they went to a Mike Pinnell was on the – people forget he was on the practice squad last year. Like, when they brought him up for the playoff games, they had to bring him – they had to elevate him from practice squad. And so he was getting – a practice squad guy was playing over him. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I make a bunch of conclusions from the Derek Nnadi signing other than they think more of him than I do. Actually, one more. They think a hell of a lot more of him than Eric Eager does on your podcast.
Eric Eager is –
first of all, he's not wrong, but Derek Nnadi did something to him that I can't figure out what it is because there's a real...
Derek Nnadi has not been good for a couple of years.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. So this does seem to be a blind spot for Brett Veach, does it not? Or Andy Reid?
Or for the rest of us. Or for all the rest of us.
Well, yes.
One or the other, I mean, right? I mean, because...
That's a fair point. Maybe we're missing... Listen, there's a strategy to being driven off the line of scrimmage as a defensive tackle. that we don't realize. It creates a gap for Chris Jones to shoot behind the guard that's blowing up Nadi.
So many people want that opportunity on the offensive line that he gets triple teamed because they just want to have the opportunity to drive him off the line. And so then it occupies. That's how he occupies.
It's like a bad pitcher's out there in a fight at the bat rack. There's
right.
a fight.
That's how he occupies.
Who gets to block Nadi?
Yeah.
Builds up the offensive line's sense of confidence, and they come in cocky if you play him a second time.
In all honesty, like the only thing I can think of with Nadi is that, you know, he's well liked. You know, he's not a guy that causes trouble in the locker room, but it's
he is a very nice man I've ever had with
him. It's like the cliche about who you're dating.
But you know, they drafted Rashee Rice, right? That's not talent trumps everything. We're usually told by personnel people.
Not everything, but lots. I mean, you and I know some names that we've been told that have not been on their draft list over the years.
Right. I would agree. But largely, yes, you need to be talented. And if you're talented, we'll tolerate some crap. Right? They
sort of a sliding scale, I would say. You know, if you're supremely talented, you know, you
put up with more. It's like the hot crazy factor.
The Matrix.
Hot, crazy Matrix.
Matrix, yeah.
The hotter she is, the more you'll put up with the crazy. Right?
What movie is this from?
It's not from a movie. There's a video.
Just your own factor?
No, there's a scientific video out
about
there.
About a billion hits on it. It's one of the greatest things.
You've never seen this?
I haven't, huh?
We'll show you.
I mean, I think
the sweet spot that you're looking for.
I think the concept is pretty elementary, but I've never actually seen the video.
It's pretty well done.
It's very well done. But we'll play it for you during the break. It doesn't take long.
You'll enjoy it.
Yeah. But there's a little bit of, like, your ability to play with your craziness is you know, it's a sliding scale. I would agree. Do you think this somewhat is because the Michael Dana signing is partially because Rashee Rice going down? They're like, okay, our plans to be way better on offense are taking a hit. So we kind of need to go ahead. We can get Dana for eight as a better player than whatever we're going to get for $8 million at wideout. We're going to have to live with what we got. We're going to have to play without Rashee Rice forever, however long we're going to have to play without him. And in that time, we're going to have to stop people more often. I mean, that's clearly what they leaned into last year. It's not the plan that I would like to be plan A, but you can't always execute plan A. So you go to plan B. Is this a sign that they're already on plan B and the idea that this offense takes a big step forward isn't going to happen?
No, I mean, first of all, I don't think that's a foolish...
Or is that the Clyde Edwards-Helaire signing we'll get to in a minute?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a foolish thought, but I don't think that's where the Chiefs are. I think Mike Dana was in their plans all along. It was just whether or not the Chiefs were going to be Mike Dana's plans based on what the market showed. And I think that he didn't have the type of market that he wanted to develop. And you and I say this all the time. I don't blame the guy for trying to get the biggest payday he can, but my guess is the Chiefs were at least in the neighborhood of the potential opportunities that he had elsewhere, and there's familiarity here. I mean, Mike Dana, and I, when I mentioned Derek Knight, like, Mike Dana is absolutely one of the most liked guys in that locker room. And I also just think that he has, I mean, look, the numbers are the numbers, but I think he's got a little bit more value than his numbers because of his versatility on passing downs to play inside. And we know now that Chris Jones picks where he plays on third downs. And Mike Dana being able to – having that option to say, the guy on the outside, you're going to play inside on this down, I think it's more valuable than what you probably could have gotten on the market, to be honest, for $8 million. I guess I would say maybe not more. I think that's exactly what I would have anticipated going into the offseason that Mike Dana would get, something that's more of the equivalent of a two-year deal for about eight per.
Yeah, but I thought it would have been somewhere else because I thought they would have been ready to hand it over to Felix Anudike-Uzama.
Which is why I agree with that point. Like, I do think, yeah, I mean, totally fair to reach some conclusions about where their confidence level is about him going in to year two. And it's not just a big season coming up for Felix. Like, it's a big off season for him. I think he's going to have, because remember last year coming out of the draft, he was injured. And so he missed this portion of the off season that's getting ready to start next week. He missed that portion last year. And I thought he was behind by the time training camp started. We saw him running with like the threes, like when training camp opened. And immediately, I think some of us wondered, was that a product of the fact that he did miss all the summer workout stuff? And he just was never able to catch up. And part of that, you know, I think was the summer stuff. Obviously, there's other stuff he's going to have to get better at as well. But it's like I said, that's all to say it's a big summer for him, not just a big upcoming season for him.
Could this be a sign that they're going to play a lot of DNs, that they're not down on – we're totally misreading this. They're not down on FAU at all. They will – you know, they bring back Mike Pinnell, Derek Nnadi,
Farrell. Give me a hypothetical, then, of what you would line up.
Well, that one of those three is gone. Tershawn Wharton, maybe one or two of those guys are gone. None of them are breaking the bank.
Tershawn's making a decent amount of money, especially for a guy that was an undrafted free agent before. I mean, he's getting, what was it, $2
million? That's per, hard to look.
It was a multi-year deal, too. To be honest, when you talk about what they've done on the defensive line, which is literally just bringing back a bunch of guys who some of whom we thought would be leaving. The Wharton deal is the one that surprised me the most. He's making close to $3 million guaranteed.
His cap hit is $1,292 and listed as a free agent next year. Let me see. Let me open up the. But maybe they haven't updated it. There you go. Base salary $2,575. One year $2.7 million.
I think it's 2.7 guaranteed, though, right?
Guaranteed. Yes, 2.74. So the whole thing's guaranteed. I don't know how his cap.
I'm looking at the same thing. I'm a little bit confused about this.
So maybe all the numbers probably haven't gotten out as to what his deal is. I don't know that Tershawn Wharton was tops on the list for the cap pages to go figure out, but we'll, there's probably an add-on year that they're not planning on getting to or whatever. But are we missing the point? Is the point just Charles Omenihu is going to be a injury settlement in camp because he's not going to be back till too far into the season for them to mess around with, and with only 1 year left on his deal? Bye bye. I mean, to me, I'd be interested.
No, because they wouldn't occupy a roster spot.
They wouldn't occupy a roster spot, but you could. It'd be a post June 1 walk away.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at his contract now. I mean, you can save a decent amount, actually.
That's what I'm saying.
Over five, but I don't know. To me, this team should be playing for January. Like they should be playing to have their best roster in January, and then potentially the opportunity for February. And Omenihu, even if he comes back in week 9, like you're still better in December and January and potentially February than you would be otherwise. So. I really think that's what they – and that's the relation to the Rashee Rice situation too. I mean, I think the Chiefs should get a receiver anyway, but I don't think they should get one because Rashee Rice is going to be facing a suspension, because we all think he'll be – that suspension is not going to be a year-long suspension, and therefore the lineup that they're anticipating that they want could still be there by, you know, December, January.
Okay.
And the worst it could cost them if they don't address it in the way you're talking would be maybe they have to go on the road for a game they wouldn't have to go. But that last year seemed to allay any fears that would be a major obstacle for them.
Yeah, good point.
You'd definitely rather play at home. But, yeah, they're good enough to win anywhere they got to play. I don't know. I'm a little – it is interesting. And especially if they go draft a defensive lineman early.
You know, Jesse Newell put this in his article about Dana today. You'll all say, well, duh, after we hear it, but I just hadn't realized it yet.
So you're saying they duh not, to what Jesse Newell wrote wow.
Well, because
in the Kansas City Star. That's impressive. Well, you usually don't see that star-on-star crime like that.
In fact, Jesse just texted you and said, what the WTF?
Except for when Blair talks about you.
It's amazing. They have not added a defensive player from, like, outside their building yet. Like, all of their signings have been just bringing guys back.
They did a lot of that last year, though. They did bring in three guys last year. I mean, yes. I don't think that becomes the norm. And I think also it'll be interesting to see what happens after the draft. Like, what is the deadline where you no longer count towards the free agent compensation formula?
I don't know that.
I don't either. And I looked for it, and I looked really hard for it, and I couldn't find it. Now, maybe I'm a dunce because I can't figure out the right language to put in there, but I find a million things about, like, when, you know, what is a restricted free agent? I want to know what there's a date where when you're signed after that date, you no longer count as a, you know, a negative for the team signing you and a positive for the team losing you. And that is a period of time where the Chiefs operate well, whether it's a Carlos Dunlap or, you know, I'm pretty sure that Donovan Smith came in that timeline last year. So I'd love to know what that date is, because then I think we might see them add some guys that they go, okay, this guy, we can get him for one for 2.5 and some incentives, or one for three. Like Mike Edwards was one for like $2 million or something last year. I mean, he's way better than the contract he ultimately ended up signing for here. So, yeah, that's where, to me, I think it will be interesting to see where they go free agent-wise. Can you explain to me the Clyde Edwards-Helaire back deal thing?
I think it's a priority of something different than what the rest of us prioritize, which is I hate that I've said this three times about three guys, and it's sort of the best thing we can come up with about two of them, but I think he's one of the favorite guys in that room, and they're losing another guy in that room. I mean, I don't know if Jerick McKinnon's going to play football next year, and I think they do want some familiarity in that room, and I think the only thing that people should be concerned about with that signing is if it prevents them from making like a move in the draft, for example. There's some good middle round guys, I think, that potentially could be decent fits. What's interesting about the running back draft class, though, is that next year a lot of guys stayed. You know, we had a guy here locally with Devin Neal who decided to stay. Like next year's draft class with running backs is supposed to be pretty loaded, and so I could see a Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing as, you know, let's buy ourselves a year. Next year's draft is the time to go get another back.
I always love that. Oh, wait till you see next year.
Well, there were some guys, like I said, Devin Neal being one of them. There were like three or four guys that I think a lot of scouts had anticipated coming out this year that did not, that will be seniors next year. So those guys are obviously coming out next year. Doesn't mean they're going to perform again this year, but that's why people are anticipating that next year's. But again, because the juniors from next year are going to understand that, so potentially some of those guys stay and instead of coming out. But I do think next year's class will be pretty decent. And this potentially allows them. The reason I don't get like worked up about signings like this is because I think the reason the Chiefs have drafted well is they put themselves in a sort of like don't have a need going into the draft.
Right,
position.
I agree.
And like now they don't need a running back going in the draft. I still think all of us think they can improve in that room, but they're not going into the draft saying, got to get a running back at some point in this draft.
They are saying, got to get a left tackle, I hope.
Yeah, and that's why, like, this is a different position than they were in last year for that reason. Well, like, there's a very,
they had Juwan
very
Taylor
obvious
on the left, and Lucas Niang was slotted on the right. Because look when Donovan Smith signed. Let's get an official date. My recollection is it even came after the draft. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was right before the draft.
May 3rd.
Yeah, so after the draft.
About a week
after. So they were in exactly the same spot. They took Wanya Morrison the 3rd and said, and we're signing Donovan Smith. Well, they have Wanya Morris under contract. They haven't signed Donovan Smith. So, I don't know. I don't see it yet in Wanya Morris. I give him the opportunity to grow into it, but
I don't think he's your starting left tackle.
I don't either.
I don't think he should be, but I also don't think he will be.
I think he looks more like a guard or a right tackle at best. But
he's a solid backup. I mean, I think he's like he could play last year when having
agreed
to play. That's a guy you want on your roster for that reason. But I just don't think he's ready to start, and it's particularly on the left side.
Yeah. So that's, to me, that's the only thing they need to get done before the draft, to say they enter that Thursday night not having to take anything. Otherwise, they enter watching the tackles come off the board, and somewhere in the 20s they're going to be like,
got to trade up for a guy that may not be worthy of trading up for, yeah.
I mean, do we want to go get Amarius Mims and his injury history? Do we want to go get, you know, and they have a type, you know. The way Curtis has a type with the ladies,
mm-hmm.
They have a type with the tackles.
Totally not familiar with that, just to be
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, I haven't seen his type. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I've known him a long time.
It's like is it like a sketch?
Yeah, he likes a little crazy, sure.
Right down.
I'll go there. Your words, man.
Wouldn't be the first crazy
from you.
Yeah. Yeah, only you can say that.
I am.
Yeah, okay.
I'm failingly honest about my background.
Yeah.
But we saw last year, there's no way to transition.
Curtis
from
with
there's
the
no
crazies?
Way to transition. Yeah. There's no yeah, way to transition
right.
from
okay,
that.
All right.
No.
We saw last year that like I do think it's a real thing that there's going to be some teams that are not eager to if the Chiefs do see a guy like Mims or something like that. I think it's real that there's going to be some teams that are like, nah, I don't think so. We know you have this need. We don't really anticipate.
You know what? Can I?
I think that's pretty limited, but I do think it's real.
Hold that thought. Yeah, okay. Thank you for adding the limited so I don't have to shout at you when we come back. Sam McDowell is here, columnist for the Kansas City Star, does a really good job. That's why we like talking to him. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. They do a very good job. You can be seen by the same experts that care for the Kansas City Current. Did you know that? You know, the University of Kansas Health System recognizes the unique challenges that female athletes face. That's why they created the region's only female athlete program, helping student athletes and adult weekend warriors reach their full athletic potential. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/female athlete. More with Sam McDowell next in the program.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. Tristan Newton of UConn. Final Four MOP scored 32 points in the two games. I asked, who was the last MOP to have fewer than 32 points?
Fewer than 32 points?
Mm-hmm. In the two games.
Oh, 32 total.
Yeah.
Ochai?
Ochai had 33.
Not a bad guess there.
Pretty good guess.
I just knew that I remember a lot of people thought that
Remy Martin?
No, it was no. David.
Well, McCormick.
McCormick.
Yeah.
Well,
I kept thinking McCullough.
Just because I'll feel stupid if I don't lob this out. Carmelo had 17 in the championship.
Yeah, he had 53 total because he went off in the semifinal.
Okay. Somebody didn't remember a 36-point game against Texas.
Yeah, he had 53.
I knew he was good. I didn't know he went that far.
To go with 24 boards. Oh, good Lord.
He had 7 assists in the championship.
I wonder how many Chalmers had in the semifinals.
Chalmers in 08 had a total of 29, but there's been a guy since him who had fewer than 32.
Yasuga or whatever his name was?
Sanogo last year, 38. So that answer was Sanogo.
It was, a Sanogo. All right.
Dad humor.
Some Virginia hump.
Kyle Guy had 39.
Wow.
For the season at Virginia?
It's amazing.
Yeah. What? I'm trying to think of champions. Since KU.
Mm-hmm. Since 08.
So Chalmers is the second to last one, though.
Actually, there's been one since Chalmers and had even fewer than Chalmers. Anthony Davis had 24. That's the lowest in the last. The lowest since Ewing had 18 in 1984. Ryan Archidiakono of UConn in 2016 had 31 points.
He was at UConn or was he at Villanova?
Villanova. That's the UConn. Villanova. Occasionally I get those two confused. I don't know, because they're East Coast teams that have similar colors.
Because both should perish in flames.
Sarin hates both of them.
That's right.
Yeah, the fewest ever was.
I don't hate Villanova. I hate UConn. I don't hate Georgetown. I mean, I like beating those schools. I don't like losing to them, but I loathe Connecticut.
By the way, I need to give a PSA regarding these answers.
They're better than us is the first one. Isn't that why everybody in America hates everybody?
That's fair. A PSA regarding these end-of-the-hour answers. If you call in and say, what was the question again, I'll help you out. And then when I hear you repeat the question and it sounds like I hear typing, and then you go, now give it to me one more time, I'm not going to keep listening to you, and I'm going to hang up on you.
Go to the next.
That may have happened in the over the top of the hour.
Okay, good to know. We just gave away a little Good Sense, goodsensesubs.com. You can order Good Sense, maybe even a lot of it if you would like. Good Sense, you know, puts on a great spread. If you got a big graduation party, got any graduation parties going on in your house? You know, anybody graduating into like
no, my 4-year-old
pull up diapers or
a few
anything?
Years away, yeah.
Okay. You can celebrate the tassel without the hassle at Good Sense Cater your graduation party. There are freshly sliced sub trays, fresh baked cookie trays, family sized pastas, or gourmet meatball slider kits. Good Sense makes catering super easy. And get $5 off any large catering tray or family sized pasta with code WHBG5. WHBG5 at GoodSense.com or on the Good Sense app. Go there today.
We did order a Good Sense party tray for my kid's first birthday, though.
There you go. It's always a big hit. It's always a big hit. They do a fantastic job. GoodSenseSubs.com. All right. So what did I say I was going to ask him about? Was it we were done with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Who wasn't going to make trades with the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah. This whole idea that the Chiefs can't make a deal because, oh, my God, they're so good, we're not going to help them out. Listen, making sure the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl will not keep your ass from getting fired if you're a general manager. So I completely find that to be the most over-talked-about thing in this town, that, like, somehow the listen, the Bears need to not lose. Ryan Poles needs to not lose his job.
He wouldn't be on that list, though.
Anybody. Like, the only teams that are in that category are the Texans, Bills, Bengals, and Ravens. Everybody else, game on. And by the way, the Ravens work on analytics, so they're not going to worry about it either. If it makes sense for them, they're going to do it. They were, you know, not for a second do I buy that. Ooh, we're so worried about helping the Chiefs. Oh, well, worry about your unemployment number.
Yeah, I mean, but you're talking about teams, like the list of teams you had are the teams that are good. So the teams that are picking right in front of the Chiefs. But I would add the division teams to that, too. Like, I think that's more universal across the NFL, that you usually don't typically trade within the division.
They were on the phone and had a deal worked out with the Raiders to go get Zay Jones until the Ravens took Zay Jones.
My point is that typically does not happen. Okay,
but my point is last year it was ready to happen. So that's why I hate when that gets brought up.
Zay Flowers?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Same thing. You know who I meant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Zay Jones got drafted too, and he once played for the Raiders.
Yeah. Zay Jones. Who is Zay Jones?
Wide receiver that played for the Raiders.
Yeah. He was the one that was originally drafted by the Bills. That had the episode where he ran naked through a plate glass window. See, I know
during
who he
a
is.
Game, oddly enough. No, it's kind of strange.
Who among us?
Don't be foolish.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think it's without merit. But I think it gets brought up all the time, like it's this boogeyman, and it's not.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So that irritates me a little bit.
I honestly think there should be zero teams on that list.
I 100% agree.
Like, I think you're making a mistake if that's at all part of your objective for the season.
We made them better. Oh, you figured out who's going to get hurt for them this year? Well, great, Kreskin, get in the market because you don't need to be screwing around with this. You'll be a billionaire in no time. Let's go. No, I agree with you. Just like here's another draft one that's just absolute crap. A future pick is worth less than a pick this year. Only to dumbasses.
Only if you think the NFL will stop playing at the end of the season.
Is the meteor coming? And we're not going to have a draft in 25 or 26, then okay, it means less. And everyone I've ever talked to, well, but next year's draft is kind of, they don't know. Everyone I talk to that's actually involved in the draft, like, listen, if we had time to completely analyze next year's draft, first of all, to even know who all's going to be in next year's draft, believe me, we'd be way better at this year's draft.
Yeah. I mean,
so
I asked,
that is, that whole idea, I don't understand, you know why it's worth less? Because I might get fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the only
reason. Yes.
But from an organizational standpoint, a second-round pick is a second-round pick. And also, there are some teams like the Chiefs are not going to pick in the top 10. Right? So a Chiefs pick in any round is not as good as a Panther pick. Okay. But the Chiefs will – Patrick Mahomes won't get hurt. Chris Jones won't get hurt. Andy Reid won't have a health scare. All those things, like we feel good. The Chiefs, the floor is 10 wins. They were almost there last year, right? So, you know, I hate these things that general managers spin and media humps pick up on, and then fans repeat that are just trash.
Well, the Bears' future pick turned out to be pretty good when last year they traded for next year's pick.
Magic Johnson went to the team that was ready to win a championship because they traded for a future pick. Like, trading for future picks is gold. It is absolute gold because it might be awesome.
Well, because teams might.
And you never have to pay for it like it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, they might overspend. I think what we should see more of in the NFL is, like, general managers basically betting with draft picks. Brett Veach should call up the other 31 guys and said, I'll trade you my first-round pick next year for your first-round pick next year. You're just banking that you're going to have a better season than everybody else. There's nobody that would accept that for the Chiefs, but would it be great if we saw, like, general managers basically wagering that their team was going to be better than somebody else? Just call up another team and say, my first for your first next year? Well, we've looked at your roster, and it sucks. We want your first-round pick next year.
And if you won't do it, you agree.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. By the way, Jockey looked up and felt that May 1, which I think is traditionally the number, Jason Anderson texted me, said he did find it. He talked about it with Teicher yesterday. Sorry, I missed that conversation. It's May 2nd this year. So May 1 is the last day that signing a free agent counts in the compensation formula this
year.
They've
got to be like in the top 35%.
Top 35%
of the league in order to qualify. First of all, there's just not as many comp picks as people think they are. That was a big conversation around L'Jarius Sneed. And it's like, this is not the guarantee that people think it is. Well, there have been like seven the last 3 years or something. Like, there's not that many compensatory picks that people think they are at that third. I'm talking about the third round level because that's what came out with like the L'Jarius Sneed thing. And you'll get a third round next year. It's like, maybe.
Yeah, no,
there's not a guarantee.
There's not many that one guy gets you a third round
pick. Right, yeah.
The teams that the Patriots 1 year got like three of them, a third, a fourth, and a fifth, and they let a ton of people walk. And I do think you should be letting people walk. You should not be able to keep your roster, because if you can, and that's what scares me a little bit about this offseason, it means they haven't exceeded their rookie contract value, right? Somewhere you've gone wrong if you're able to keep everybody, right? Something is a disaster. If you win a Super Bowl, you should have guys that are too expensive on the open market for you to be able to keep. I mean, you have no choice but to continue to be good in the draft and free agency. Your talent acquisition and talent development must be good. There is no way to finagle your way past that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Jeff Chedid said on your podcast last night that Mike Dana is the first guy that Brett Veach had signed that he drafted to a multi-year deal. Second contract, and like the success has been fine, and none of us are saying that's a result of bad drafts that this team has had. They've drafted well, but to your point, they're confident they're going to draft well again the next year, that they don't need to stretch themselves they've had plenty of guys that have signed multi-year deals. It just hasn't been with them.
Yeah. So that being said, they should draft let me put it this way. What is their dream scenario? Sitting at 32, what's going on? Do you have a draft crush? We gave some of our draft crushes last night on the Golden Bowl podcast. Do you have a draft crush if they're there, this is great for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean.
Or like not filling out a bracket, do you not have crushes in the draft?
Well, offensive tackles, I really don't, because I don't feel like I have like this great ability to be like, oh, look at this guy's footwork and handwork on this block pass pro right here.
Good initial punch.
Curtis is an expert.
Works well in space.
Are you?
Yeah, he's tremendous in the tackle position.
No idea.
Look for a huge ass. Huge ass and long arms. That's all you need.
That is a lot of it. Quick feet, big ass, long arms. Letting the ass and long arms is a good starting point.
I guess we all personally know some good offensive tackles.
You might
in
be
the NFL.
Sitting in a room with at least one of those two factors.
Yeah.
The Chiefs also have a type. I don't know that they have taken since Andy Reid came to town an offensive tackle in any round where their arms are shorter than 35 inches.
Yeah.
So you can eliminate the Oregon State guy. Didn't he come in at 34 and change? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if he fell clear to 32. Maybe they'd be like, well, we don't like the arms, but we got to take a shot. But, like, that's why I'm, like, Amarius Mims, if you just kind of put the athletic testing, like Joe Alt and Amarius Mims, you might not be able to pick who's who, right, the testing part. And so I think Mims would be a guy that they would like, and I can't even, Abengier, if you want a later prospect. And I heard Matt Derrick was ripping Mel Kiper today. Even not a Mel Kiper fan, I guess. But Mel, I guess on his, I haven't looked at it, his latest mock draft, had that guy going to the second round. I will tell you, I did sit and chat with Mel during the breaks. I did Dari and Mel on Saturday, and we were talking about it. We were talking about the Chiefs' love of arm length.
Mm-hmm.
That kid's 36. He's 6'5 and an eighth with 36 and a quarter, I think, arms, or 36 and an eighth. And his explosion's pretty good. Now, he played at Yale, and he's had some injuries. But if he's, and Mel put him in the second round. But if he's there.
Kingsley Suamataya?
No.
Okay.
But is he at Yale?
BYU.
No, Yale.
This guy.
Yale.
And the one I just see from, is that Mel Kiper?
Oh, well, maybe I got it wrong.
He may have a new one, but it has a guy from.
From BYU?
From BYU going.
Did you see a Y against some blue and think it was Yale?
That might be. No, there's a Yale guy. Mel told me he had him in the third round. Because I was like, where you got this guy? Because I knew I was going to do it for one of my draft crushes. And he's like, I got him in the third round. And I'm like, long arms, athletic, twitchy, I don't know. And he's like, yeah, well, he said, that's what happens. He said, you get the good teams, get to the bottom of the round. Like, no way he's going to be there at the bottom of the next round. So the good teams take the upside a lot when they get in each round. So the BYU guys' arms, I think, are short, but maybe I'm confusing them with somebody.
The kid you're talking about from Yale's got 36 and 1/8 for his reach. Kieran, I haven't heard his last name said. I just see it spelled AmeGadJie.
Amenji, I think, or something like that. But
Amagaji is what it looks like to me.
Sure, that sounds good. It'll take me 2 weeks, but I'll get it figured out after they take him, if they do.
The big picture takeaway for the Chiefs of the draft is, like, it converges well for them. First of all, it's deep at wide receiver. It's deep at offensive tackle. Those are also two premium positions that you should be taking in the first round, even if you don't really necessarily need those positions. Like, they're two of the four premium positions that you should be taking first, second day. And they need those more than they need other positions first or second day. And there's going to be some guys that fall. I really like a guy that you and Eric picked out yesterday with
Ladd McConkey
from Georgia, purely because, like, when you watch his tape, and when I say tape, like, I watch more that, like, the good tape, right? I watch more of the highlight stuff from these guys, so they should stand out. But he creates a lot of separation.
Yeah,
like, he's beating guys off the line, and, like, when he doesn't beat guys off the line, like, he still finds ways to create separation. And the only knock on him is his size. And you talked about
6 foot 189.
My point is, you talk about the Chiefs having a type at offensive tackle. They don't mind if guys are only 6 foot and play wide receiver. I don't think that would prevent the Chiefs from taking a guy like that.
We'll take a break. One more with Sam McDowell. He's brought to you by our friends, as always, at the University of Kansas Health System. They're open. Walk-in care is available at 435 and all. They're open right now. Go see them today. Sam McDowell's here, columnist of the Kansas City Star, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Sam, when do you buy in that the Royals are a contender?
A contender?
For the division title.
Let's say if they're within, like, 5 games at the All-Star break, you're in it.
You won't be convinced until the All-Star break.
Well, I mean, if you got to – let's use the same – graph to say, if you're up by like 10
what
games,
graph are you talking about?
Well, the one that we watched during the break. If you're up
the crazy
by like,
hot matrix,
but if you're up by a certain amount, there should be a sliding scale. You know, if you're up, I mean, if they're up 8 games or something like that on June 1, I mean, all of us are going to say they're a contender. They're good, like. The way they've won the last 2 games really stands out.
I agree.
It's not just that they're on a 5-game win streak, like. They only won 5 games last year when they trailed by 3 runs, and they just did it in back-to-back games. Like, last night's game, I was at last night's game, Curtis and I were, and, like, they had every excuse in the world to lose that game. The Rays pitched okay. Jordan Alvarez got him on, like, pitches that were not that bad of pitches, but still, your ace gave up a lot of base runners. You're down 3-0 to a guy that hasn't given up a run all year on a team that has reached the postseason 7 straight years. It's not a slouch team, even though they were, what, 4-7 entering the game, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's not a game I recall them winning last year. Day before, or the game before on Sunday, got a no-hitter going against you for the first four innings. But what stood out in the locker room after the game, clubhouse after the game, just to finish this thought, is that...
What?
I asked...
stood out in the clubhouse. The music.
Oh, my God. My wife was complaining. I was watching the post game. She's like, I can't even hear what he's saying.
I was standing feet from Bobby Witt Jr. I didn't hear a single answer.
She goes, why don't they go turn the music down? I go, because it's a major league clubhouse, honey. They're children. This is what they do. It's their thing to be. It's the first time they've been good, so they don't even know how to be good.
You can. I mean, you think it's hard for you to hear? Like my voice going across that is brutal.
Just kept going. What? What?
I talked to a few players just about like because you know I just think the cliche question is when you get to a guy in the fifth and you didn't get to him in the first four. I was like, all right, what? How'd you guys adjust? And what stood out? It was they didn't really make adjustments. It was more that they realized that third inning alone is a great example of this. Like they hit the ball hard and looked at the process over the results and said the process is working here. You know, Michael Garcia hit a ball to left field that's out in like 10 ballparks. Next batter Bobby Witt hits one that's out in like 22 ballparks. To lead off that inning, Kyle Isbell hit a ground ball that is had like an expected BA of like 400. So like they were and they had walked three times. So like their at bats and plate appearances were okay, and they said the process is working even if the results are not, and that's the process. So that really stood out to me that you see a team that is used to not good results that stuck with the process.
Your point about the wins last two nights, baseball to me, winning teams are like a good streak in blackjack. Like if you're going to make money, number one, you got to double down, but also you got to hit 16 and win sometimes.
Good point, yeah.
All right, who was the first NFL quarterback sacked by Derek Thomas? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.